Progressive Radio Network.
Sonny Stitt on Very Cherished Vinyl with Best Slow Blues. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Monday, December the 24th, and President Obama and his family are in Hawaii on their customary Christmas vacation. House Speaker John Boehner still is battling to hold on to his leadership among Republicans in Congress. Hillary Clinton still has a headache and won't be able to talk about Benghazi until mid-January. And opposition is growing on two fronts against Obama's rumored nominee for Secretary of Defense, replacing Leon Panetta, the departing Leon Panetta. And that is Chuck Hagel. The pro-Israeli lobby says that Hagel, a Republican former senator from Nebraska, is just not staunch enough in his support for Israel, and the gay community has not forgiven him for saying 14 years ago that gays would not make good diplomats. But other than that, it's a slow-moving day. So let's turn our attention to the much-vaunted news conference of last Friday. That is the one by the NRA, held in reaction to the December 14th massacre of 20 pupils and 6 administrators and teachers at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. The killer, Adam Lanza, first killed his mother while she was sleeping, then drove to the school, shot his way in, mowed down his victims, and then killed himself as armed police prepared to enter the school. Here's NRA's Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre announcing the immediate rollout of what the gun lobby says is a national program. It's calling it the National School Shield Program. Pierre LaPierre says it's a solution to the problem of mass killings and other forms of lethal violence in the nation's schools. Here's an excerpt of what he said.
Now, I call on Congress today to act immediately to appropriate whatever is necessary to put armed police officers in every single school in this nation, and to do it now, to make sure that blanket safety is in place when our kids return to school in January. Before Congress reconvenes, before we engage in any lengthy debate over legislation, regulation, or anything else, as soon as our kids return to school after the holiday break, we need to have every single school in America immediately deploy a protection program proven to work, and by that, I mean armed security. Right now today, every school in the United States should plan meetings with parents, school administrators, teachers, local authorities, and draw upon every resource that's out there and available to erect a cordon of protection around our kids right now. Every school is going to have a different solution based on its own unique situation. Every school in America needs to immediately identify, dedicate, and deploy the resources necessary to put these security forces in place, though, right now. And the National Rifle Association, as America's preeminent trainer of law enforcement and security personnel, for the past 50 years, we have 11,000 police training instructors in the NRA, is ready, willing, and uniquely qualified to help. Our training programs are the most advanced in the world. That expertise must be brought to bear to protect our schools and our children now. We did it for our nation's defense industries and military installations during World War II. We did it for very young kids with our Eddie Eagle Child Safety Program that is throughout the country in schools right now. And we'll do it again today. The NRA is going to bring all its knowledge, all its dedication, and all its resources to develop a model National School Shield Emergency Response Program for every single school in America that wants it. From armed security to building design and access control to information technology to student and teacher training, this multifaceted program will be developed by the very best experts in the field. Former Congressman Asa Hutchinson will lead the effort as National Director of the National Model School Shield Program, with a budget provided by the NRA of whatever scope the task requires. His experience as a United States Attorney, Director of the Drug Enforcement Agency, and Undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Security will give him the knowledge and expertise to hire the most knowledgeable and credentialed experts that are available in the United States of America to get this program up and running from the first day forward. If we truly cherish our kids more than our money, more than our celebrities, more than our sports stadiums, we must give them the greatest level of protection possible. And that security is only available with properly trained, armed good guys. Under ACE's leadership, our team of security experts will make this program available for the world for protecting our children at school. And we'll make that program available to every single school in America free of charge. That's a plan of action that can and will make a real, positive, indisputable difference in the safety of our children, and it will start right now. There's going to be a lot of time for talk and debate later. This is a time, this is a day for decisive action. We can't wait for the next unspeakable crime to happen before we act. We can't lose precious time debating legislation that won't work. We mustn't allow politics or personal prejudice to divide us. We must act now. For the sake of every child in America, I call on every parent, I call on every teacher, I call on every school administrator, every law enforcement officer in this country, to join with us and help create a National School Shield Safety Program to protect our children with the only positive line of defense that's tested and proven to work. And now, to tell you more about the program, I'd like to introduce the head of the effort, former U.S. Congressman, former U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Arkansas and former Administrator of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, the Honorable Congressman Asa Hutchinson.
Okay, so that was the Executive Vice President of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre. And now we will hear from the former Congressman William Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, who now works for the NRA and who is tapped to be the national director of this special program. Hutchinson is a former federal prosecutor and administrator of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration and the very first appointed undersecretary for border and transportation security at the Department of Homeland Security. Here's what he had to say.
That my team of experts will be independent and will be guided solely by what are the best security solutions for the safety of our children while at school. Even though we are just starting this process, I envision this initiative will have two key elements. First of all, it will be based on a model security plan, a comprehensive strategy for school security based upon the latest, most up-to-date technical information from the foremost experts in their fields. This model security plan will serve as a template, a set of best practices, principles, and guidelines that every school in America can tweak as needed and tailor to their own set of circumstances. Every school and community is different, but this model security plan will allow every school to choose among its various components to develop a school safety strategy that fits their own unique circumstance, whether it's a large urban school or a small rural school such as we have in Arkansas or anything in between. Armed, trained, qualified school security personnel will be one element of that plan, but by no means the only element. If a school decides, for whatever reason, that it doesn't want or need armed security personnel, that, of course, is a decision to be made by the parents and the local school board at the local level. The second point I want to make is that this will be a program that does not depend upon massive funding from local authorities or the federal government. Instead, it'll make use of local volunteers serving in their own communities. In my home state of Arkansas, my son was a volunteer with a local group called Watchdog Dads, who volunteer their time at schools to patrol playgrounds and provide a measure of added security. President Clinton initiated a program called Cops in School, but the federal response is not sufficient for today's task. Whether they're retired police, retired military, or rescue personnel, I think there are people in every community in this country who would be happy to serve if only someone asked them and gave them the training and certifications to do so. The National Rifle Association is the natural, obvious choice to sponsor this program. Their gun safety, marksmanship, and hunter education programs have set the standard for well over a century. Over the past 25 years, their Eddie Eagle Gun Safe program has taught over 26 million kids that real guns aren't toys. And today, child gun accidents are at the lowest levels ever recorded. School safety is a complex issue with no simple single solution. But I believe trained, qualified, armed security is one key component among many that can provide the first line of difference as well as the last line of defense. Again, I welcome the opportunity to serve this vital, potentially life-saving effort. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, heard that as well. We don't need to hear the questions. We just needed to hear the statements because you're going to be doing some hard listening and hard analysis today. And this is a perfect example of what happens. People think they're hearing one thing, but the subtext is where we are going today. What was said between LaPierre and Hutchinson, a ton of things were said that are worrying or worrisome. And what I'm looking for when we take this break and you call in at 1-888-874-4888, we are going to get into the subtext of what we just heard. I want you to concentrate and just move away from the literal. We all heard what we heard, and that is easily decipherable. But everything said or everything written practically has a subtext to it, another narrative. And this is a splendid example of that subtext, because in that brief presentation, we have an extraordinary picture unfolding before our very eyes. And guess what? Nobody covered that because they went for the literal. So you're going to think really hard. And when you come on the air today, I want you to take us into the subtext. There are at least 10 major points that were absolutely not expressed blatantly and openly, but insinuated. And there is where we're going to go right after this break. The number to call is 888-874-4888. And remember, we're not looking for polemics. We're looking for analysis. I'm looking to see whether you latched on to the subtext right after this. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Utrice Lead, and we are listening to your analysis. Now, remember, we're going for what you heard under what was said. And I'm going to press you to see how keen your analysis is. All right, we have James from Queens. You're on.
Oh, good afternoon, Miss Lee.
Hello. What did you hear? What is your subtext? What did you latch on to?
Well, number one, I see there's two stories.
Okay.
Crisis. Number one, the NRA, it's a silent organization. Not many people know about the organization. Majority of your presidents, vice presidents, are members. Some of them are members for life, and some of them are just card-carrying members. But in a sense, the organization has been polluted to the point of getting their ways of so-called Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment has been abused too much.
All right, but you're straying. I'm going to ask you to pay your attention to what was said, just
well,
the two clips, and what you deduced
said,
from that.
What was said really doesn't make sense at all, because number one, to say, make a blank statement, well, I want to put guards in all the schools. Well, that's up to the states to do that, not the federal government. Secondly, the federal government has a mandate to take away firearms when there's a riot or when there's a civil unrest. Because within that oath of the office that the president takes, he has to make sure that he can control the problems that are going to come up domestically. The issue is that people tend to ride on the issue, well, I have a right to have a firearm for protection. That's one thing. But when you get a person out there who is a misfit with a firearm, just like what happened in Florida, with that young black child was killed, unarmed, by a misfit security guard that wasn't even properly trained to use a weapon, but the community
All right.
hired him to so-called protect the area. And when this child came upon him, he immediately, this fool, got out and shoot the person.
Okay, I take your point. But again, I want you to see, not necessarily to dispute what was said, because there's a lot of disputation that you can do there. I want you to take exactly what was said. And what are they communicating? That's what I want you to figure out. What are they communicating without tearing it apart, but just identifying what was said, the subtext of it.
Subliminally, what they're saying is that, well, every so-called American citizen that is Caucasian should be armed to the teeth.
Okay.
Canceling out non-colored people.
Is that what he's saying?
That's what they're aiming at.
Because how do you know? From what you said,
were to ask, say, I want to purchase a firearm, they would say no, regardless of what lifestyle or what, how good you are, upriding citizen or whatever. And if you did get a firearm, you have to get their permission.
Okay, and therefore, what does this hint at? If they're organizing people, or they're going to be in the process of organizing people, what does this come close to?
Well, it comes close to a little law that they passed secretly called Stand Your Ground.
Stand Your Ground.
Which in turn, not many people know too much about that. And that was done by the corporate industry because they're in the point of selling firearms. They're not interested in making peace with people. It's
all
right. People can buy.
What I was getting at, James, is one of the reasons for gun control historically has been about a militia. Now, when a gun lobby says, we will organize people for you, we have the expertise, we have the know-how, we know how to train people. Does the word militia come to mind at all?
Well, militia is already established. You have an Army, Navy, an Air Force, and a Marine Corps. That's your militia. You have a National Guard set up by the states. There are 48 or 49 or 50 states. There are 50 National Guard units that are there that are designed by the governor at his will. He can use those militia to put down any civil disturbance. But to say you're going to organize something, that's going against the grain of the Constitution.
But actually, if you are a diehard Second Amendment person and you latch on to the historical birth of the rights that were accrued by the Second Amendment for individuals to have the right also to defend the state.
That has to come under the governor.
Well,
and the governor has a National Guard for that. He doesn't need civilians.
I'm not arguing with what they say. I'm just saying that is an interesting subtext to what was said. That element is there. So pay attention to it. Thank you, James, for calling. Thanks so much. Now, I will offer one observation that is right underneath. And the observation, apart from what James has said, I would offer the observation, I have it as number two on my list. Government does not have the solution. We, the people, do. That is a very strong message. And again, it goes into this long historical relationship between groups such as the gun lobby and the notion that government has to, you know, basically take its hands off. They've said it right there in plain sight. They sent a direct message to anybody listening. Your government does not have the answer. Your government can't solve this problem. We can, and we will, and we have the resources to do so. We could get this thing done tomorrow if everybody's ready. But don't depend on government, he says. Forget the debates and the legislation. That could come later. But up front, please, the message that they're communicating is they have the answer, and government does not. That is very powerful, a very powerful message, because what? It situates the NRA as an authority figure, an alternative to government. And that is a very powerful subtext. We have John from Staten Island.
Season's greetings, Catrice, to you and your listeners. Yes, what I heard was that they're going to sell more guns and put more guards in every school. That means the gun lobbyists would make and the NRA would make a lot more money. They will make millions of dollars more, and their answer is to sell more guns. With the Second Amendment, I think also everybody around the country is collecting guns in the black communities, unarming the black people, but selling guns to the white people.
Well, that's an interesting subtext, and it was there, no question about that. But and when you say they're interested in selling guns, basically you're talking about what? An industry.
I'm talking about citizens.
They are selling the industry.
Yes.
They're spokesmen for a very thriving sector of the economy, which is weapons. And weapons manufacturers.
And also that with the Fast and Furious, when they attacked the Attorney General, they were sending a message that also that black people will not only be killed by guns, but they can be killed by the pharmaceutical industrial complex. They could be killed by in jails. They could be killed by people who are members of the NRA who are closet Ku Klux Klan people, and they will destroy people like they destroyed Sergeant James Brown in El Paso County Jail. This is a case I would like you to look into.
Yeah, but let's stay with the subject right now for the moment. By the way, we're going to get into the history of gun laws because you will see, as I will share with you, that it dates back, especially as it applies to African Americans, but not only African Americans. It applied to foreigners. It even applied to the labor union movement. But first and foremost, it was applied to African Americans as early as 1640 in the United States. The first recorded restrictive legislation against African Americans owning guns, the year 1640. So that tells you that this is a long-standing piece of legislation where African-Americans are concerned. So we'll get into that. Thanks a lot, though, for calling
God
on,
bless.
John. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're getting to the subtext. So we have that we have something of an organization seeking to affirm its space, which is very important. It is selling its technology and know-how, its knowledge, which it has indicated, is available. It is also selling an industry. It is a spokesperson for an industry. And that is a very important subtext as well. What subtext did you get? We're not tearing apart. We're not arguing with them today. We're just observing what was said, and it registers, even though they didn't say it literally, it is there. And this news conference, you may recall, was much anticipated because people were wondering what would the NRA say? And they managed the press. Very well. They were in charge of the press. The media didn't get any leaks about anything that they were going to say. It was almost anticlimactic when they did, in fact, have the news conference. But they managed the press. That's a very important thing to take note of. This is an organization that has a science of operating. These are not jokers. These are people who are serious about their interests. And they managed the entire process from beginning to end. Did anybody get the subtext that the NRA, just from what we listened to, essentially declared that it is no longer just a national organization? They are now ready to export their technology and expertise to the world. They're global. And that is part of where they're going to go. I'm pretty sure you'll see signals of that when other countries would call them in to find out what they can do. And they have a cottage industry of consulting, and they will export their knowledge and expertise abroad. It is no accident that the major spokesman, the person who will direct the entire operation, is a former administrator of the DEA and the former undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. These are credentials. They presented their credentials, which are quite impressive. And there are lots of governments abroad, apart from governments here, that would be interested in consulting with this entity that has taken charge. 888-874-4888. What we're looking at is an organization that is marketing. It's waited for the ample opportunity. It did not have a knee-jerk reaction. It chose when and where it was going to speak. It absolutely controlled its public, the access of the public to it, and who represented the organization, who spoke for the organization. And they had a set program. This is where they headed. They ought to be taken very seriously. This is not a fly-by-night operation. But they're indicating to America a very important message. This government of yours, this President Obama and his administration, don't depend on them to solve your problems. They can't. They certainly won't solve it by January when the kids are supposed to be back in school. They're saying by the time your kids get back to college, if you go with us, you will have a solution. If you value your children, you will go with us. You will endorse our way of doing things. Never mind legislation and all that stuff. That's, for the moment, that's second place. The primary thing for you to worry about is your precious children. That's the one important thing you want to worry about. And in that, we share your concern. We are here to help. And guess what? It wouldn't even cost a dime. Not only do we have the expertise, we also are not a money-spending government, wasteful money-spending government. We have a gift to offer our fellow citizens. And the gift is our knowledge and our expertise. We want volunteers. Volunteer with us, which means they're recruiting. That's a recruitment call. If ever you ever heard of one, that's a recruitment call. Volunteer with us, which means they gather additional strength and at the local level, but they're also looking global. They're acting local, but they're global. They have used this event to place themselves in the international arena because this event got international attention. And they are the possessors of knowledge, specialized knowledge. Now, we could tear this apart at another time, but I'm trying to say to you, this is how organizations move in this world. This is how they move around politics. This is how they break down barriers. This is how they become juggernauts. And by the way they handled events, guess what? They have the legislators now wanting to know, well, I'll base my position on what the NRA says. Or if I disagree, I'm not going to be as vocal because they're going to come and get me. They're going to come and just throw me out of office. They sent that signal, nice and subtly. They said, don't worry with the legislating. Don't worry with the debating. Don't worry about the laws. We'll deal with that later. Right now, we have, the program is called an emergency problem. We have an emergency solution that can be put into play right this minute. We have the knowledge. What is also interesting is the way they had normalized, and I think James was the one who pointed that out, they normalized, psychologically normalized something that to the average person is absolutely incredulous. And that is, how do you beat the bad guys? You get good guys to shoot them. The bad guys with a gun could be outshot by a good guy with a gun. Now, if somebody were talking to you this way, you would say, I mean, your jaw would drop. But look how normal it sounded. This solution that they have, which is the old solution that they've always had, you outgun the guy with the gun. You outshoot the shooter. And the psychological process of normalizing this so that you internalize it as, in fact, a logical choice. It seems reasonable now. It doesn't sound nearly as bad as it was before. I mean, you could adjust to the logic of that. And then later on, somewhere is going to hit you. Is that really logic? But it is so easily and glibly stated. It was even like an afterthought. You don't need to invest too much emotion here. You don't even have to invest too much logic. You just have to just go with reasonable feeling from their perspective, which is, look, somebody's coming to get you. Your job is to get them first. And that's all you need to be concerned about. And we could train you how to get them first. Yes, it's in a school setting, we know. But again, we are protecting our most precious resource, and we have that in agreement. What we're doing is protecting the children. And that's all you have to be concerned about. He says, this program, Cops in School, he made it a point to say that it was started by President Clinton. Why did he say that? He's saying that to say, if you thought this idea was crazy, or is crazy because we're a lot of Republicans and we're conservative people, if you think it's crazy because we are suggesting it, please be reminded now, the originator of the schools, Cops in Schools program was your liberal friend, Bill Clinton. So if you had no trouble adjusting to it under such a nice guy, saxophone playing guy, understand that this is no different. We just have a whole different concept to it. And we can mobilize because we have trained what? And this is part of the advertising for the rest of the world. It's not necessarily just for domestic consumption. For the rest of the world, we have trained in excess of 11,000 police and law enforcement people. So we are even more expert than the cops. Now, if under Clinton you tolerated cops in school, why all of a sudden are you having a problem with it? If it was logical under Clinton, why all of a sudden is it illogical? If it was acceptable under Clinton, why are you now saying that it is unacceptable? And this is not a new idea. We recognize Bill Clinton's contribution by putting cops in the schools. We are just saying now we need to take control of what he already started. It's a really wonderful sales job, a very nice way that they're selling illogical stuff, but they're selling it very nicely. You don't have to agree with it. That's not our point today. We don't have to agree with any of this because we'll be getting into the gun lobby. But we're talking about how an organization with a special interest situates itself in the midst of what the nation saw as a crisis and uses a moment of crisis to literally promote its brand, to set out its agenda, which is multifaceted. The agenda is to grow the organization. The agenda is to play a pivotal role in growing the industry, the domestic arms industry. The objective is to get the people to sanction what they would normally question. The objective is to implement without much discussion and legislation, to implement this program as quickly as possible. The objective is to control everything from soup to nuts themselves because this program will be theirs. This is their intellectual property that they are making use of as a gift to the country, but it is not owned by the government. It is theirs. It's their intellectual property. They're willing to share it. They're willing to share their knowledge and expertise. We heard them discuss the domestic situation, but in a manner that suggests that they are open and they're telling people all around the world. They didn't say it that way, but they said it. We have the expertise. People all over the world who have been monitoring this particular situation will also be monitoring the response to it. And they will get some business consulting with governments willing to hear what this special knowledge is. In the same way that the School of the Americas at Fort Benning in Georgia served and still serves as a school that has been teaching some rather interesting military operations to dictatorial regimes in Central and South America. We had that discussion on this particular program. So also, we are not wasteful people. We do not subscribe to the idea that government has to be involved in anything, everything. In fact, in keeping with their anti-government sentiments, when I say anti-government, I mean the attitude that the citizens have power, if not equal to, but greater than even government. And if citizens, this is a call to arms, literally, pardon the pun, for the citizens, get involved. Don't wait for the government. They can't solve your problem. They can't solve this. You should have no faith in government or the legislative process. You're only wasting time. And we are interested. We all agree. Everybody agrees. We all want the best for our children. So if you cherish your children, you will hurry up and get on board this moving train. Just in about 8 minutes, these are all the messages that they communicated as subtexts to what was actually said. They talked about, they actually wrested control from the media. It was the first time in a long time that the media simply did not know what to do, but wait until the NRA chose to let them know. So the NRA actually proved to itself and to the media who's in charge. And of course, they got a lot of, you know, a lot of flack. You know, Pierce Morgan and all these other hosts of programs got very agitated. And one, they did not shy away from these programs. They went knowing they may get a very negative reaction. But this NRA that you're looking at is an organization that has refined itself to the point where you have to see it literally as a parallel, prototypical type of shadow government itself. It has influenced all these laws. It's influencing the national mindset. And it's actually in a position now to go global. And it will soon go global. As a matter of fact, on Friday, we saw the launching of something called the Gun News Network on YouTube, which is an outgrowth of this movement. They now have a channel devoted entirely to guns. So they're global. So make no mistake, what you're seeing is a whole bunch of things that are not spoken of literally, but they're there. All you have to do is listen really hard. They have brought on board very highly skilled people, very trustworthy people with fine credentials, all the more not only to impress the American people, but to impress foreign governments and foreign entities. Asa Hutchinson is a find for an organization such as this. But they're footing the bill. They're paying him what they think he's worth. And of course, he wouldn't work for the NRA unless he's paid pretty well. But this is how organizations that are serious about its agenda, that's how they move. And it's a case study because we will be seeing some organizations like that right now. Again, the nomination of the rumored Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, may not get the nomination after all, because President Obama might be too intimidated by the force opposing him that says Hagel is not sufficiently loyal to the interests of Israel. That's his main thing going against him right now. And no matter how fervent Obama's feeling was for him, feeling that he would make a good nominee, I bet you, by the time Obama comes back, he would have a different idea. When these organizations, you're looking at the power of organizations that are well-financed and that have an independence that is almost enviable because they're so well-financed. They actually are a shadow government. They can bend the will of the government to suit their needs. And make no mistake, even though the legislators, when they come back from their break and they get down to business with this gun control, don't believe that they would leave out the NRA for a second. They're not going to. So this is what I wanted us to see. It looks like a regular news conference. It's conducted like a regular news conference, but it is not a regular news conference. There are all these coded messages underneath all of that that was said. And we only listened, like I said, to about 8 or 9 minutes of it. Two excerpts from a news conference that ran more than 32 minutes. But in that short span of time, these are the messages that they communicated. So It is important always to listen for what is not said. Listen hard. Tear it apart. And you'd see how many messages we got. I identified between myself and the callers. We got about 13 or so major messages that came within that short span of time. And that is really, really superb crafting. And that is because these folks have all the resources that they need to get what they want done. They take it seriously. Now, the flip side of the coin is that opponents are not nearly as organized or not nearly as prepared. Not even the government is prepared to move as quickly as the NRA is. And this is how it works. This is how they gain points. You know, we can have this thing ready for you maybe by the end of the week. But your government is going to take another 2-3 months, and then will come all the lawyers behind that, and they'll be debating ad infinitum about the laws and the constitutionality of things, and they're going to get into that. And before you know it, the whole year will go by, and we'll get nothing done. So don't trust your government. They cannot do this job. We, the people, have the power. And they said it, join with us. In other words, the implication is not with them. Don't go with them. You join with us. You strengthen our hand in taking on this matter. And together, the mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, we all stand together to protect our most treasured assets, our children. Now, what could be more patriotic than that? How are you going to argue against something like that? Well, there's room to argue, but I didn't want to do that today. We'll be getting into, later on in this week, we'll be getting into the gun laws and a historical overview. Like I said, it goes back quite a ways to the year 1640. And it's a very interesting history behind it. Well, feel free to drop me a line and continue the conversation at leadstories@gmail.com, L-E-I-D, stories@gmail.com. And keep it right here on PRN.FM. Up next, Richard Martin and Wake Up Call. And tomorrow, those of you who do the Christmas thing, have a very Merry Christmas. See you on Wednesday.